are listening to the Oakland Asian Mom Podcast.
So welcome to this episode of the Oakland Asian Mom Podcast. And we are really happy and excited to welcome Florence to the podcast. Welcome, Florence.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's really awesome to be here.
So we usually remain semi-anonymous on the podcast, but I guess because you're a journalist, I'm assuming you don't mind us using your last name, or do you want to be semi-anonymous?
No, it's completely fine. I feel like I ask a lot of people to be vulnerable with me in my work, and so I feel like it's only fair.
So we'll call you Florence M for now.
That works. That
it's totally so intriguing.
Yeah, much more mysterious that way.
M for mysterious. So we have a question that we like to start off asking all of our guests, and that's to share what your ethnic and cultural roots are, where you grew up, and what places you would call home, and how you would describe your partner and children in terms of their race and ethnicity.
That's a really good one. I feel like it's never super crystal clear to me exactly how to answer, but I am, so I'm biracial. I'm half Chinese from my mom's side, half white, German and English on my dad's side. And so I'm Hapa. Like I am also not really sure if there's a better word to use, but I'm basically a mixture of things. And I grew up actually on the border of California and Mexico in the Imperial Valley. It's a small town called El Centro. And so I actually grew up really surrounded by Mexican culture. I would say more than even like Chinese culture. And so a lot of the things that I grew up eating and practicing culturally was kind of Mexican-centric, which is really interesting. My partner is Chinese, and so that makes our little baby three quarters Chinese and a quarter white.
Thank you. So do you consider El Centro home still, or?
I do. You know, it's I would say it's home. And I also feel like I have a number of like sub homes. I spent a lot of time in San Diego, and San Diego is the closest kind of big city in the US to El Centro. And so San Diego also feels like home. I lived in San Francisco for close to 10 years. And so that also feels like home, and I'm in Oakland now. And so that also kind of feels like home. Mm-hmm. But if we talk about home, it would, be El Centro.
And can I ask on your, both of your parents' side, like how recently did folks immigrate over to the United States?
Yeah. On my mom's side, my grandpa, my grandpa immigrated to the US into, the Bay Area. So he came through Angel Island before it closed down. And, he stayed at Angel Island for a bit and then settled in San Francisco, Oakland, the Sassoon Valley, just up north of here. He was picking fruit and then stayed in the Bay when he kind of started working grocery stores and then opened up a little grocery store in Oakland. And my grandma on my mom's side, she actually was born and raised half of the time in Hawaii before Hawaii was a U.S. state. It was a U.S. territory, but she was born and raised in Hawaii, but actually went back to China to get educated for a bit, and then was matched to my grandpa who was in the Bay. And so she basically came on via ship and came back to, came to the Bay Area to essentially get married. And so that is my mom's side. And then on my dad's side, I'm actually not sure. I just know that, you know, my grandparents, I think, were in like Connecticut on the East Coast before they settled in California. And I don't actually know too much more, kind of how long our family has been in the U.S. on that side.
So for your grandparents, did they come from like the same area of China and speak the same dialect, or were they, you know, from different areas speaking different dialects?
That's a good question. I think they came from other areas, but this is making me realize that I should ask. I know that my family spoke Longdu, which is a dialect, but I have a feeling that it came from my grandmother, but I'm not 100% sure. So I don't actually know too much of that backstory.
Mm-hmm. So was your mother raised in Oakland? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a twist, because I thought that, you know, you moved to Oakland a couple years ago, but then you actually, your mom, that's really cool.
Yeah. Fun twist, because you're right. I came to Oakland in 2019, right before the pandemic. But I actually came to Oakland kind of growing up to see my grandparents. Oh, and my mom was born and raised here. And then Mike, he was born in Oakland, but raised in Fremont, and his family, on his mom's side, actually grew up kind of in our area. And his dad, he immigrated from the Philippines, actually first lived like two blocks up from us. And so we have a fair amount of family roots here and a fair amount of roots actually in the neighborhood itself, which
Wow. So did your mom know his mom growing up?
Okay, you will not believe this, but so no, I don't think they did, but his grandma and my grandma were like BFFs
before
Mike and I knew each other. And so they lived in the same kind of retirement home when Mike and I were both in college. And so they knew each other there. They would go to Bible studies together. And Mike and I think we must have met each other's grandmothers, because whenever we went to go visit our own grandma, the thing to do is to get lunch with your grandma and all her friends. And so we are pretty confident that we met each other's grandmas before we met each other. We started dating in college, and then somehow our grandmothers connected that their grandkids were dating each other, which is so wild.
Yeah, that is such a sweet story.
Yeah, it feels like a movie. Like it feels too strange to be real, but
I have those little stories too. My husband's from San Diego, so we have an affinity for San Diego. Yes. And have I shared this with you, Sarah, already about how my husband's father is Filipino and my parents are Filipino, and my maternal grandfather was an engineer for like the water company there in the Philippines. And James's paternal grandfather worked in the dam in the Philippines. And so my mom, as a child, they said, oh, every year we would go to the dam and they would have a yearly picnic. It's like being a worker for East Bay Mud, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine the film, everybody. So my mom always thinks, I think that your grandfather, who I grew up with, he ultimately immigrated from the Philippines here, knew James's, my husband's grandfather, because everybody knew each other. So I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so weird. Even in our homeland, in our ancestral homelands, like people knew each other, right? And thus, it's like when someone asks you, oh, do you know this person? It's like probably really true. Like in some ways, everyone knows each other. We're all related or interconnected.
So they're from the same area of the Philippines as well?
Not necessarily grew up in the same area, but worked in the same company.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they would have company picnics together. So I'm like, oh my gosh, that kind of really weirded me out.
It's a small world.
Yeah.
It's a small world.
Yeah. Well, Florence, we were going to ask you about being a relatively recent Oakland Asian mom and what your familiarity with Oakland was before. And you've sort of mentioned, you know, coming here as a child because of your mother's family roots here. So I am curious, like, what drew you to raising a family in Oakland? Yeah, if you could touch upon that a bit.
Yeah. Well, one, can I go on a little bit of a tangent and sure. tell you a fun story? So I have not really seen my grandmother's house in a long time, even though it's in Oakland. And I used to go there a lot growing up. But Mike and I just the other day happened to be in the area, and it's actually kind of close to Lakeshore. And I was like, wait, I feel like we're really close to where my grandma's house was. Let's go find it. And so we drove around and we found it. And then Mike made a joke like, oh, you should go knock on the door. And I was like, wait, but should I? And so there's kind of a point to this, but then a woman walked out of the house, and I was like, oh, now's my chance. I should go talk to her. And I went and introduced myself, and I told her, you know, I grew up coming to your home. My grandma lived here. My mom was raised in this house. And so we just started chatting, and then she's like, do you want to come inside? And I was like, wow, that's so wild. I'm a stranger, and she's inviting me into her house. And she literally let me walk through all the rooms.
Oh, wow.
And I almost started crying because I hadn't seen it in a couple decades. And walking through the doors and seeing like where my grandma used to cook sausage for breakfast, and where we used to, you know, get takeout from Chinatown and bring it back and eat it on the dining table, and all the memories running up and down the stairs when I was little. And yeah, it really just brought me back to those early days in Oakland, which was really fun. But the point I wanted to make was that it was so wild that she trusted me to come into her home. And I think that is one thing that really drew me to Oakland and the idea of raising a family here. I think a lot of people see Oakland in one particular light. A lot of things that they see in the news about crime in Oakland, but something that I find really special about Oakland is the community here and the trust among the community. And so I lived in San Francisco maybe for about 10 years before moving to Oakland, and only lived in two places. So I was there for a number of years in each spot, but never really met any of my neighbors. It's just so transitory, so busy. And a lot of people are in apartments. And so we just never really met anybody. But moving here to Oakland, in the first day, like five neighbors came and introduced themselves and brought things over. One of our neighbors filled up a plastic grocery bag with beer and Coke from his fridge, and he was like, welcome to the neighborhood, and brought it over. And so I think what really drew us to Oakland was that sense of community, which is really nice here.
Oh, that's very sweet. I have to say, though, my neighbors didn't do that for me.
You know, you're welcome to move to our neighborhood if you'd like.
But I have had a very warm welcome. And I do think we are between two very long-term Oakland families, and people really watch out for each other, and there's a lot of just kindness that goes around. And I know Cheryl knows like everyone on her block pretty much, right?
Yeah. I live on a block where there's not that many apartments, even though our neighborhood is very densely populated. Mm-hmm. So you get folks who have been here for a very long time, and we're sandwiched in between two Latino neighbors who pretty much grew up in that home, or, you know, we're pretty much raised there. So yeah, we have like old Latino neighbors on one side. I literally don't know their names. I just call them abuelo. And I think I recently found out his name from their adult child who comes visits. But I was like, I don't even think I remember. He's just abuelo to me. And he every time says, oh, your kids are so big now. And so we've been here for 10 years. Amazing. And even my neighbor on the other, every morning, those boys are getting so big, you know, every morning, no doubt. Yeah. He says that every morning.
I mean, at that age in particular, you're going to see them change so much, which is really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are some things that are unique to motherhood in Oakland? And I guess like you would have to compare it to motherhood somewhere else, but you haven't really experienced motherhood anywhere else as far as I know. But I guess like
can't say that I have.
Yeah, what has felt unique, or what has felt just comforting about raising a newly turned 1 year old in Oakland?
I think just going off of what we were just talking about is the neighbors. I feel like kind of like Cheryl have had the opportunity to kind of get to know a lot of the neighbors over the last couple of years, especially around the pandemic. All you could do was take walks around the block. And so, we would meet people, and that was really nice. And I feel like when I was pregnant, and all I could do, because it was a pandemic pregnancy, was like walk around the block. I felt like everyone saw me getting really huge slowly over the course of 9-10 months. And everyone was really excited about it. And that felt really special, because I was like, why are they so excited? When our baby was born, a lot of neighbors like wanted to buy him clothes and gifts and things like that. And so I think that just felt really cool. And so that community, especially in our neighborhood, I feel like we really lucked out with a really great neighborhood. That felt like a really nice aspect of raising a family in Oakland, mm-hmm. like having those folks around. Mm-hmm. And also Mike's family is primarily like 95% in the Bay Area, and none of them are in Oakland any longer, but it's pretty central to where a lot of them are. And so we feel really lucky that we get a lot of support mm-hmm. from them, and mm-hmm. Oakland's like pretty accessible to other spots of the Bay Area. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Oh yeah. Having that family support is crucial. Ooh. Yeah.
I don't know how we would do it without Mike's mom. Comes 3 days a week and watches the little one. Uh-huh. And just like every time I'm like, I have no idea how I would do this without her. Yeah. And also because the cost of living is insane. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. we are paying for 2 days of childcare, and I don't know how we would do it if we needed to pay for more, mm-hmm. So
Cheryl's mom is the MVP of grandmas. Ooh. And mm-hmm. she helped raise five, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Raised five. My three nephews were older sets, and then my older, and then my youngest. And even at the very end, you would think she would like reduce her hours of caretaking. She actually increased them. She made me a deal. She says, okay, you send the older one to preschool, I'll take care of your youngest for 4 days a week.
Oh, so, that's amazing.
Yeah. She always texts me pictures of like Facebook reminds her 8 years ago that, Lola and my son were like hanging out either in Costco or doing this. So he has a very special place in his heart for Lola. And even the other days, like, I miss sleeping with her, because he got spoiled like that.
Yeah.
Well, he's the baby of all the grandkids too. The baby. Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask, like, as your partner's family comes here to Oakland, is there any restaurant or any like nostalgia or a place that they like to go to, since both of you have such history? Like, is there a restaurant when you were little that you remember, or that your mom talks about, or like wonders, like, is it still around? Can we go there?
Nothing specific comes to mind, other than we used to go to one particular place in Chinatown to pick up food before going to my grandma's every time mm-hmm. that we came into town. And I've asked around the family, and no one remembers like exactly which one it is. And I was like, perfect. I can't tell. Yeah. And so I love the question, but I can't think of anything, nothing too specific, other than I know that I want to track one down, but I don't know where it is.
No, it's fine. No one really knows the names. It's always like the one with the blue awning, or the one on the corner of this and the street. Just double park, it'll be okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Cheryl and I feel like we devoted half an episode to talking about how parking in Chinatown makes us stressed.
I mean, Chinatown is like king of double parking. You just have to go with it.
Yeah, with attitude too.
Yeah.
No, you shouldn't be sweating. You should just be like, this is what we do.
Confident. Yeah. Yeah. Like no one gets tickets, right? It's just like expected. Not that I know of.
Just like open the trunk and then somebody thinks you're gonna sell something or whatever. They'll be like, oh, they're fine. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, we're gonna pivot a little, and the way that we got reconnected, and Florence and I know each other because her partner and I used to work together, and I haven't seen her in 8 years in person. But we got reconnected because I was reading Oakland Side, one of the local news websites, and I saw your byline. I was like, wait a minute, because I had known that you were working in the nonprofit sector, and then recently made a switch to journalism. So mm-hmm. We are curious, like, what kind of sparked that change? And, you know, it sounds like you did it during the pandemic while, you know, being pregnant and having a baby. So we are curious to hear about that journey and what has been hard, what has been joyful, what has been easy, like how you were able to make that career change in such a I don't want to say chaotic, but pretty busy season in your life.
I would definitely say chaotic. Definitely. I knew for a really long time that I wanted to do photojournalism. And I just had it in the back of my mind that this is going to be a second career of mine. I just love, my mom actually was a photojournalist for a small newspaper back in our hometown. And when I look around the world, I always saw things in photo. Like I was always framing, like, what would this look like? How would I frame this scene? And it was just in me. And about 5 years ago, I did a photojournalism workshop. It was like very random. I didn't know I was interested in journalism. I just knew I loved photography. And I was like, I want to use some of my vacation time from work to go and jump into photo. And I did this workshop because the messaging that they had around like telling other people's stories and getting to know people. And that really resonated with me. And I found that really interesting. So I did that workshop. And I fell in love. Like it changed my life. I was like, I don't want to stop. I followed these women in Mexico who were competing in essentially the Mexican rodeo that was primarily reserved for men. And they were just, I wanted to show the dedication and the grit and all the hard work that they were putting into the sport that traditionally wasn't for them. And I didn't want to stop. I was just working day and night. And it really just opened my eyes to what like storytelling is like and what a privilege it is to get to know people and hear what life is like for them. And so since that happened, I knew I was going to pivot at some point. And so in parallel, I was also thinking about starting a family. And I was actually pretty hesitant because I felt like I had all these ambitions. I knew I wanted to do another career. And I feel like journalism is not extremely accommodating to having young ones. And I didn't know how to reconcile all of that. And so for a number of years, I just kept mulling over the decision. What do I do? Do I start a family or do I pivot and do a career change and follow this dream? Mm-hmm. And I was really indecisive and didn't really know what to do for a long time. And so during the pandemic, I just kind of got to a point where I was like, I have to do something. I feel stagnant because I'm stuck in this place of not knowing how to move forward. And I weighed the two options and I felt like I was going to regret either one. Like if I didn't do one, I knew I was going to regret it. And so I decided to do both at the same time. And I was like, this is probably a really horrible decision. Like, I could have made this decision a few years ago and just staggered the timing. But I was like, I'm almost 35, the age when they tell us that we're geriatric with having children. I was like, you know, I'm nearing that threshold. And I also don't want to wait on changing my career, you know? And so I was like, okay, I'm just going to do it all at the same time. And so we got pregnant and I worked on my grad school application because I thought a good way to pivot was to go through grad school. And I was huge and was doing the application and getting everything together. And so I was 9 months pregnant and I got an interview scheduled to go to UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. And I was like, okay, baby, just stay inside. Mama's got to do this thing. And I had the interview and it went well. And then I think maybe like a week later, I went into labor and gave birth. And then about a week after that, I got a call from UC Berkeley to let me know that I was admitted to the journalism program. And so it's been an insane, chaotic whirlwind. And I felt really lucky in terms of timing. When Kenji, my son, when he was born, or sorry, actually, like when I started school, it was about five, he was about 5 months old. And so the timing was like fairly good. He was in a stage where he didn't need a ton of, like he was not as attached as when he was first born. He's starting to get a little independent, and I felt like I could go to school, but it was really hard. Just so much about it was hard, like balancing wanting to be a very involved and present parent and taking on a whole new career and homework. I was like, what is homework? I haven't been in school in a really long time. And trying to navigate all that, but also while pumping, I was trying to pump at school and did for a number of months. And I was running to the pumping room every 2 to 3 hours. And our classes are like 3 to sometimes 4 hours long. Mm-hmm. And so I was like trying to balance all of it. And at one point I was like, I don't care anymore. And I just started pumping in class. And I was like, I don't care if people see my boobs or milk spills or whatever. I was like, I'm losing a lot of instruction time, a lot of social time. And it was really stressful, you know, trying to like run into a closet and hide that and sometimes cry because I like spilled milk everywhere. And I was like, oh my God, I don't have enough milk. I can't spill it. Yeah. And so it's been chaotic and stressful, but also really rewarding. It's amazing to feel like I'm pushing myself, like I'm growing, like I'm actually doing this dream that I had to do photos and to learn journalism. And it's also really amazing to look at my little guy, like, you're a real human being. How is this possible? And to see those both happening at the same time, it's definitely the hardest thing that I've ever done. And also the most rewarding. And like coming to this podcast with you both, I was like, okay, should I look nice? Like, should I fix my hair? And I was like, they do not care. Like, it's been a crazy last couple of days doing assignments. I just got in a new article to Oakland Side a couple hours ago and feeling so in the middle of the chaos. And I was like, these are the people who are going to understand if I just like show up and look chaotic. It's okay. But yeah, so that's kind of the journey to where I am now doing both.
Oh, wow. Now I feel kind of bad that I asked you to on the podcast because you're so you're so busy.
No.
Not I'm just this is still fun. Thinking about the visual of like you're probably, were you at Northgate? I went to Berkeley. So
yes,
like, were you at Northgate?
Yeah.
I was like, wow, like that's so amazing. So liberating to be like, and then like, did the professor like I mean, they probably couldn't say anything because it would be like sort of like discriminatory or something. They would be canceled or something.
Right.
But then but the pump I use are really noisy. I'm sure they have very silent pumps. I bet they're
quiet now. Yeah.
So even in like my journey, so I started with what I felt like were relatively discreet pumps, but they made me look like I was Dolly Parton or Madonna with like very pointy boobies. And like, but there is very portable, like you could like put it under your shirt, but it stuck out a lot. You definitely heard that. Brr, 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 brr. And I was like, and our class sizes are relatively small. We have like 10 people in a class. And I'm honestly like one of the oldest people in the cohort. So many of them are fresh out of undergrad. And I'm like showing up, just like whipping these pointy pumps under my shirt, pressing the button, and it's like, womp, 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 womp. And I'm just like sitting trying to look like nothing at all is happening. And I definitely, like, everyone is trying to be understanding and supportive, but I definitely saw many people just being like, wait, what is that? Like, what is that noise? What's going on? And so it took, I felt actually like I would like to think that I didn't care at all and was so confident, you know, whipping it out and doing it, but I was actually pretty self-conscious until I kind of just got used to it myself.
Yeah.
And
goes Florence and her pumps.
Yeah, there's Florence and her pumps.
It's like nothing.
And I felt really lucky, like I had a really great professor who I spoke to ahead of time. I was like, hey, just heads up, I'm gonna start doing this in your class. And she was like, great, go for it, you know, anything you need, just go for it. So that was really nice.
So are you using like is it the Willow? That's like the stand. It's like cordless, right?
Yeah. So, okay, wait. So I started with that big kind of bulky pointy one, but very portable. I got a new one I have to remember what is the name of it, but it's the cup that just goes into your bra. Have you seen that?
I've seen something called the Willow, which was like this cordless thing, but yeah, I wonder if I don't know.
It's probably very similar. I'm going to have to Google the name, but it was only like $130, which is so cheap for your freedom of like your boobs do look much bigger, but it was way more portable because it didn't have the
valves bottles, and all the
bottles hanging off of it. Mm. It's just like big cups that you just slip into your bra, and it had two pumps on each one, and so like literally everything's just contained in your bra. Oh. And that's it, like nothing hanging off, no bottles everywhere. Yeah, it's really
could you concentrate during this? I mean, I guess you got used to it, huh? I'm so sorry, I'm so fixated on this. It's like we're taking notes.
You can never fully concentrate, you know, when your boobs are like vibrating and milk is squirting out. It's really hard to tune that out entirely, but you do get somewhat used to it.
Yeah. You know, I bet some people had no idea what was going on, because I think until I started pumping, I had never seen anyone pump. You know what I mean? Like, I'd heard about it, but I'd never seen it or heard it or anything like that. So, you know, and especially like people in their 20s, they're like, what is going on?
You are probably right. Yeah, and that it probably explains some of the looks that I got, where obviously, you know, people wanted to be like, they were like, oh, I'm not looking, but they can't help it because they're like, what in the world is happening right now? Yeah. And there's like no hiding, just like reaching all the way up into your shirt, you know? So
yeah. And breast milk, it really stains. It's no joke. I remember like shirts could be really ruined if little dots are there. And
I never really spilt too much on my clothes, but I definitely like spilt lots onto the floor. Oh. So yeah, very precious drops, legendary milk, legendary as in D-A-I-R-Y, excuse me.
Dairy?
Like milk dairy.
Like milk dairy. And it was the Amani I2 wearable pump
come a long way, I have to say. I mean, they've really, really come a long way. But I was thinking, remember back in the day, well, this is a long time for me, where if you were all nervous and you're not making, you had to like drink a lot of fenugreek, and then you had to like think about your baby crying so they could start. I mean, that's a lot of rituals
letdown.
Yeah.
The letdown.
Yes.
I had never heard of a letdown until it happened to me. And I told the nurse in the hospital, like after the day after I gave birth, and I was like, I'm feeling something. It's like burning. And they're like, oh, it's a letdown. And I'd never heard of that ever in my life. I was like, how come we don't know these things?
Yeah. Well, when you were talking about like having to go a couple hours in a class while you're pumping, I was like, my body sort of had this like physical reaction. You remember that feeling of just like being so full of milk?
Yeah.
And like kind of like frantic.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, I need to release this.
Yeah. Having that sensation again.
Mm-hmm. And then drinking a lot of water, because you have to drink water to produce the milk, right? It doesn't. Yeah.
I felt like I was drinking like a gallon of water at night. Like it woke me up so much. Like I was like, even when the baby's not waking me up, I'm waking up from thirst in the middle of the night, which is really wild. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So much
and I
water.
Was very sweaty during that. I don't know why I was, it was just maybe still sweaty and very stinky.
Wait, so you started to sweat after you had kids?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Mm. Yeah. We could cut this out, but I like to tell, I joke with my women's group, like, I never sweat that much until I had my babies. And then one pit would smell more than the other pit. And then even to this day, my left pit smells more to the right. And I blame it on their hormones.
Yeah.
I never really smelled myself until maybe because I didn't take a shower as often, right? When you're postpartum, like, do you really want to take a shower? It's like, you'd rather take a nap, right?
Yeah.
So I go, oh gosh, I'm really stinky. And so I go, now I still have one smelly pit and one pit that doesn't smell at all, which is, it's uneven.
I have one smellier pit as well, but it's always been like that. And I blame it on my white side because Asians oftentimes don't sweat or smell. I know this is generalization, but I always wish that I inherited those genes in particular. And the like hairless white genes as well. But I really got all the white genes for those, which is inconvenient.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, Mike doesn't have to wear deodorant, and I'm always very jealous of that.
Well, of my family of origin, I'm the only one that has to wear deodorant regularly. Mm. Everyone else, my mom, my dad, my sister, they don't wear deodorant. So that's
you wear deodorant. Do you scrub? Do you scrub like the Korean scrub?
I do, but not every day.
How about the armpits? Do you scrub there?
with a washcloth.
Oh, you need a more semi-abrasive.
Would that help, though? Do you think that would help?
Yes, it does.
What,
it
you're
does.
Like, you're taking out the sweat glands or something? Like,
it's like washing dishes. There's only so much a soft sponge can clean. And if you have stick-on sticky stuff, you need the other side, right?
Gotta break through that.
Yeah.
That grease. Oh, that oil.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Okay, sorry. That was a very long tangent, but that was worth it.
It was definitely worth it.
Well, going back to your current work at Oaklandside, you just submitted an article. Are there anything that you're reporting on that, you know, that you've worked on or currently work on that that's been kind of fun for you? And then, you know, what drew you to these stories?
Yeah, I mean, really right on theme is I'm really interested on doing reporting that covers motherhood and postpartum in particular, because I just realized that I feel like it's not talked about enough. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm just getting started. But I really do want to start doing more reporting on postpartum in particular. But one fun story that I did last year, which it did get published by Oaklandside, was a story about the Native American Health Center. And they were doing an initiative to reach more MOM, M-A-M, speaking immigrants who are in Oakland, learn about breastfeeding. And so were making TikTok videos in the MOM language. And I was like, this is fascinating. I need to learn about it. And that was a pretty cool story to work on. It felt awesome because I live kind of near the Native American Health Center. So I felt like I was able to do a story that felt, you know, relatively close to home. I was doing a story on breastfeeding as I was literally pumping at the coffee shop right next door to Native American Health Center. I go to that coffee shop to work sometimes. And so it just felt really fulfilling to, I was like pushing myself to pump in public. And I was trying to be brave and pump at the coffee shop. And meanwhile, I was also writing a story about breastfeeding and increasing access to information about breastfeeding through this program that Native American Health Center's WIC program was executing. And so that felt really meaningful to be able to work on that story close to home and on a topic that felt really relevant to my life in that moment and something that I just want to talk more about. And so that was an example. I did another story after that on postpartum efforts that are happening in Oakland and the Bay Area to support new moms, particularly Black moms, because they're disproportionately hit with a lot of negative health outcomes and experience a lot of racism in the system, and that impacts every part of their lives, including giving birth and including postpartum. And so there are some amazing organizations that are supporting Black moms in the area, and had the opportunity to profile some of them and talk about postpartum health and what that looks like. Some crazy statistics the CDC came out with recently that said 80% of pregnancy related deaths are preventable. That's mind blowing. Yeah. They're preventable. And that more than half of them happened the first year postpartum.
Wow.
That blew my mind. The fact that we don't see headlines about that everywhere. Like 80% of these deaths are preventable. And I haven't really heard of any major changes happening in the healthcare system or policy changes or like people getting up in arms about addressing this. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like that really motivated me to want to cover more about motherhood, more about parenthood and postpartum in particular, because I think it's the part of the pregnancy experience that gets overlooked quite a bit.
Can you share more about the process of your assignments? Do you pitch ideas? Do you get assignments? Do you work for Oakland Side and then you get to pitch stories for another venue, or how does that work?
Yeah, so I don't work for Oakland Side. A lot of the stories that I worked on actually originated through basically homework at UC Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And so we're taking essentially production classes where we actually have to go out and do journalism. And so for my writing course, we were really lucky, that the instructor, Professor Lisa Armstrong, had a relationship with CitySide and with Oakland Side. She connected us with them. And so anytime we did a story for class, we had the opportunity to pitch it then to Oakland Side. And then Oakland Side could decide if they were interested in the story and if they wanted to move forward with publishing. And so that really started the relationship with Oakland Side, which was amazing. It was an incredible opportunity. And I love so much about Oakland Side and what they do and how they represent Oakland. And so from there, then I had the opportunity, just like as other stories came up, to reach out to the editor and pitch to them. So that's kind of how it came about. But I consider myself a freelancer at this mm-hmm. point, and so I can reach out to different publications. But because I live in Oakland and I really feel invested in telling stories that are close to home, Oakland side like really makes sense in a lot of ways.
Let's see, you know, when you thought about the big pivot, I'm calling it the big pivot already. Did you think about any role models either that you've, you know, along the way on this journey, or are there any role models in your field that you kind of look to or aspire to or get inspiration from?
Yeah, one very intimidating thing is that there aren't too many. Mm-hmm. There aren't too many moms in the journalism fields, and there aren't too many moms with very new children. And so it was pretty scary, but there is one person in particular who was really the person I thought about the most when I was kind of making this decision. And her name is Andrea Bruce. And I had the opportunity to learn under her through that first workshop that I mentioned, mm-hmm. The workshop in Mexico where I first got introduced to photojournalism. And she has had an incredible career in photojournalism and storytelling. And she worked overseas for many years covering war abroad and lived in the Middle East, and told really amazing sensitive stories. And so when I think a lot of people cover war, there's a lot of kind of stereotypical scenes that you see. There's a lot of stereotypical kind of storytelling that happens. And she really went behind the scenes and got to know the community and women in particular, and told very intimate stories. Mm-hmm. And so she would get to know women who worked as sex workers to support their family, and became friends with them, and actually became like close friends, like in her life with them, and got to share some of their stories, but really seeing them and sharing that, showing them as human, and looking at small, meaningful community events that happen in the midst of chaos and war. Mm-hmm. And I mm-hmm. really appreciated that perspective. And she actually decided to become a parent after kind of coming back from overseas and living in the US. And so she moved in with her mom and decided to have a child and raise her daughter with her mom and supporting her. And she was one of the few people that I knew and could look to who was doing journalism and making it work. And I think mm-hmm. one thing that I saw from her experience was that it really does take community, and you really can't do it alone. And it really made me value and appreciate Mike's family who's in the area. And so, yeah, so Andrea Bruce is one person that I kind of see as a role model in that space.
Yeah. And so when folks find out you do the freelance journalism work, you know, what do you think people think journalists do versus what you actually do? Like, how would you describe maybe, I guess, folks' perception and then the realities of it?
Yeah. I think probably a lot of people think about journalism as a couple of things come to mind, as very investigative, as mm-hmm. like this hardcore, you know, tracking people down and airing out all their dirty secrets and lots of drama. And there definitely is that. Investigative journalism is important and is a thing, absolutely. But I think there's also a lot of smaller stories that are not crazy dramatic that are also really important and meaningful to tell. And so I think something I've come to appreciate more is community journalism and solutions journalism, which one of my friends really focuses on in her work, where you're telling stories about people who are really doing amazing things in the community and not just all the like crazy dramatic bad things mm-hmm. that happen. Yeah. So I think we have oftentimes the perception of like the TV shows, yeah. but it's not always crazy. And I think there's a lot of meaning in the smaller stories as well.
Well, Florence, we want to close with asking you a question. And so the question is, how has your body been this year? Resilient, tired, vital, healing, any other terms to describe it? And is there a way that you'd like to change your relationship with your body in the year ahead? Or are you pretty happy with the way that you are relating to your body right now?
Yeah, I would say my body has been very changing, I guess is what I would say. And I feel like from the external world, like from the external perspective, like folks might feel like I don't look so drastically different pre and post birth. But I just found the journey of watching your body change during pregnancy and then grappling with changes postpartum really unexpected in a way, because I don't know, I just feel like you don't hear that much about it, about the body changes that happen and what the emotional aspect of it is like. It's funny saying this on a podcast, but like one of the main changes is that my boobs are saggier. They just don't feel the same.
And girl.
Which is like not shocking, mm-hmm. but it somehow matters a lot to me, you know? Mm-hmm. And the change is just so, it's like going through puberty, but like to the next level.
Yeah.
Your hormones are changing, but like it's to another degree for sure. And so I think this year has been just a journey of understanding my body, of trying to be okay with change in my body, with trying to feel secure when I don't always feel secure, and trying to find joy in my body and like celebrate it mm-hmm. and not get caught up on things that feel superficial. Not saying that it doesn't matter, but like I think there's a lot of expectations that are put on women's bodies that we feel like we have to live up to, and trying to get to a place where I can put that aside and love my body as it's changing. And if there are stretch marks or if your boobs are saggier, like being like, yeah, my body went through all that and it was mm-hmm. so badass. Like I was so yeah. badass mm-hmm. and like celebrating that and seeing the crazy miracle that journeying through pregnancy and motherhood and birth and all of that was. And like, yeah, my body knew exactly what to do and it did it. And now I have a little person running around and they're amazing. And being able to look at my body and look at it with awe
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
is something that I want and I'm trying to look and trying to learn. And I think I'm not quite there yet. I still like mourn changes that I see in my body, even if they're big or small. It's hard, change is hard, you know, and just trying to process it and move from a place of like mourning change to really like respecting and celebrating my body yeah. for the strength and resilience that it had this last year. And mm-hmm. so that's what I'm working on now.
Yeah. I hear beautiful. That.
Yeah. yeah. I think it's just like, it reminds me of this, sort of ongoing practice that we have to do to really, I don't know, just be accepting and to know our body's beautiful in every stage that we're in, right? You know, like I am pushing, gosh, my late 40s officially this year. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to be entering the zone or that no one wants to talk about, the premenopausal, you know, zones.
Oh yeah.
You know, so I'm like, okay.
Yeah. People don't talk about like postpartum. They really don't talk about perimenopause and all of that.
Yes.
And it's another change. And like, so how do we begin that practice as early as possible to know like, oh yeah, this is just part of it. And this is our body. And look how amazing it is. Yeah.
Do you feel like, you know, people in your community who are talking about it pretty openly?
I have some women friends who are a little bit older than me. And so I feel like I do have a safe space to go to. I think my mom doesn't know what it was like because she didn't necessarily go through it, because in her generation, well, particularly my mom had a hysterectomy. So it was not, you know.
Yeah.
So it is really interesting. And particularly, you know, we talk a lot about our ethnic identity and Asian, like all that stuff. I never really talked about with my mom very directly. I think when I became a mom, it was a little bit easier to talk about body changes and this and that happening. But as a young person, or even as I get older and she gets older, I don't really talk about it. What was that like for her? Any advice for me? So I really think it's seeking out peers and to kind of break that stigma of like, yeah, we need to talk about this because it's really, really important. And how does it impact so many, not only your daily life, but just how you perceive yourself, right, as a woman in of a certain age. So we did usually ask our folks about the Asian mom superpower or the favorite Asian mom saying. Has anything come to mind? If you want to end with that, you could choose one.
I'm trying to, I don't know why nothing is really coming to me right away.
I mean, there are so many Asian mom superpowers already. Breastfeeding during class. I mean, that was like,
yeah, okay. Yeah. It's that.
It's just the confidence even if not confidence, the bravery to just start, to just do things
in like public, even if
to do things in public, even if it feels really scary. Pursuing big changes, pursuing parenthood in the first place while doing big career change, while busting out the pumps and stuffing your bra in the middle of class and not worrying about milk spilling out in public and all of that. I guess that would say it's that bravery of like doing it, even if you're really scared and you don't really feel like you know what you're doing. Yeah. It's just pushing forward and being willing to take the risks.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that is definitely an Asian mom superpower. That's one
and cutting fruit, right?
And cutting fruit, yes. Yes, exactly.
Well, Florence, it's been just a joy catching up and hearing about your journey, both like professionally and personally. And we're so glad that you were able to join, and hopefully you'll be able to get some sleep and rest. And I don't know what else you have on your list of things to do, but thank you for making the time and space to talk with us.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really fun. So thank you for having me. And really appreciate it.
Take care, and don't forget to call your mom.